Hello, Houston. A very happy Monday to you. It is Monday of the seventh week of Easter. It is May 18th in the year of our Lord, 2026, and you are listening to Catholic Lunch Break, the weekly program where we catch up with all things Catholic in the greater Houston area. We just celebrated this past Sunday, Ascension Sunday, and as I mentioned, it is the Monday of the seventh week of Easter. Today's readings focus on faith strengthened by the Holy Spirit, courage in following Christ, and preparation for Pentecost. This upcoming Sunday, of course, we as a church celebrate Pentecost, the coming of the Holy Spirit to the disciples so that they would have the courage to go out and preach the gospel message. Congratulations to all of our Catholic school graduates here locally in the greater Houston area. This past weekend, Friday and Saturday in particular, were particularly busy days for local families and students at different levels of Catholic education. Coming up on today's program, Catholic Lunch Break, we're going to talk with one of those new high school graduates who is now taking the next step towards becoming a seminarian. We'll hear from Graham Lively, who just graduated from St. Pius X High School in Houston, about his discernment process and how in participating in track and cross country helped him grow closer to Christ. Also on the program for today, we'll hear from a longtime friend of Catholic Lunch Break, Father Paul Felix. Father Felix is the pastor at the Church of the Annunciation in downtown Houston. That's the historic church that's next to the baseball park. Father Felix will bring us up to speed on all the goings-on at his parish and an upcoming sacred music concert his church is hosting this upcoming Thursday night. Finally, a big congratulations to the new president and CEO of San Jose Clinic. We will talk with Paul Kulas about his coming on board with the ministry just 2 months ago. Paul Kulas will tell us all about his own Catholic family, his friends, why joining a ministry like the San Jose Clinic truly is a blessing for him. Before we do all that, though, we want to focus on prayer. May, of course, is dedicated to the Blessed Virgin Mary, honoring her role as Mother of God and spiritual mother to all Christians. So if you join me here in prayer, in the name of the Father, and of the Son, and of the Holy Spirit, amen. Remember, O most gracious Virgin Mary, that never was it known that anyone who fled to thy protection, implored thy help, or sought thine intercession was left unaided. Inspired by this confidence, I fly unto thee, O Virgin of Virgins, my Mother. To thee do I come, before thee I stand, sinful and sorrowful. O Mother of the Word incarnate, despise not my petitions, but in thy mercy hear and answer me. In the name of the Father, and of the Son, and of the Holy Spirit, amen. Again, you are listening to Catholic Lunch Break. This is the weekly program where we catch up with all things Catholic in the greater Houston area. My name is Wyatt Goolsby, executive director of this radio station, AM 1430. Helping me out in producing this program is KSHJ General Manager Zach Allen. Also helping me out is our GRN Business Manager, David Magianis, today. A special thanks to St. Jerome Catholic Church in Houston. My colleague, Zach Allen, was there this past weekend with a Guadalupe Radio Network table in their narthex. Zach told me it was great to converse with so many folks at St. Jerome's. Shout out to their pastor, Father Jonathan Morey. Zach says he even ran into one of our GRN volunteers and Anna McCorkle, who was attending Mass with her sister. We have so many friends and family who support this radio station over at St. Jerome's. So thanks again to everyone there for this past weekend. Also, a big thank you to St. Mary of the Miraculous Medal in Texas City, in particular, Father Clint Ressler, as well as Ben, their deacon in training, and Nina in the church office. To the best of my knowledge, we at this radio station, KSHJ AM 1430, had never had someone visit that church with a table, St. Mary of the Miraculous Medal in Texas City, in our 13 years of existence as a radio station. So for me, it was really an honor and a pleasure to be there with the table in their narthex and simply letting people know about our Catholic ministry as well. Again, Father Clint Ressler was one of the priests who had played in the Priests versus Seminarians basketball game in April, so it was great to see him there at that event. And again, a thank you to everyone at St. Mary of the Miraculous Medal in Texas City. Again, great to be there this past Sunday. Fullness of Truth is hosting its Summer Catholic Family Conference, June the 5th through the 7th, and it's not too late to sign up. The Catholic Culture Revival 3.0 will be held at the Kalahari Resort and Convention Center in Round Rock, Texas. Conference speakers include Father Chad Ripperger, Kyle Clement, Jennifer Baugh, and Jesse Romero. There will also be a Saturday youth track and family-friendly activities. There's even a comedy show with Catholic convert Shane Smith. Conference registration and hotel information can be found on their website. It's fullnessoftruth.org. That's fullnessoftruth.org. St. Pius X High School is proud to announce that one of their graduates from this past weekend has accepted a higher calling and is discerning the priesthood. Graham Lively is making plans to join the seminary. He and his family attend Mass at St. Rose of Lima in Houston. And of course, decisions about joining the seminary come with the support of so many people in our Catholic community. So we invited Graham Lively to come to the radio station to talk about how he made the decision to follow God's calling in his life. Joining us on the Guadalupe Radio Network to talk more about an evening of sacred music coming up Thursday, May 21st, is Father Paul Felix. Father Felix is the pastor at the Church of the Annunciation, which is located in downtown Houston, a historic church, Church of the Annunciation. Father Felix, great to have you back here on the program. Always appreciate your being with us.
Thank you so much, Wyatt. It's such a
Joining us on the program is Graham Lively. Graham just graduated from St. Pius X High School in Houston, and he is entering seminary formation and going through that process. So we're glad to have Graham here to tell us a little bit more about what that process is of discerning the priesthood. Graham, welcome into the studio. Glad to have you here at KSHJ.
Thank you for having me.
Congratulations on your graduation from St. Pius X High School in Houston.
Thank you.
Congratulations on everything that you've been doing. I know, Graham, that you've been involved in so much stuff at St. Pius, academically, athletically. You do track and cross country. You did a bunch of AP classes as well. So how does it feel having wrapped everything up? I bet it's kind of, I don't know, overwhelming?
I mean, it feels great to have everything done with, but I know in a couple of weeks I'm already starting part of seminary formation, so I just got to keep myself alert and ready for what's next. So.
Yeah, and I know in the meantime, at least in the immediate, you're going to be here in Houston area, even though eventually you're going to go off to Holy Trinity Seminary, which is in
Dallas
area. Yeah, exactly. So, but for right now, you're staying in the greater Houston area for at least, what, next month or so, roughly? Very good. So I want to ask you all about that and what it's like to discern the priesthood and the people that you've been in contact with, including Father Richard McNeely with the Archdiocese. But first, let's just go back again. You're graduating from St. Pius. Tell me about being so involved with everything. You took a bunch of AP courses. How many AP courses did you take this year? Did you say?
So this year I took three, but last year I took, I think, five or six. So
wow. Graham, I want to take a moment here because a college prep environment like St. Pius X is hard enough as it is, right?
Yes.
But you're taking honors classes, AP classes, you do track and cross country, you played a little bit of basketball for 2 years. How do you manage all of it?
I think getting started freshman year and just kind of just getting introduced to the space. I didn't take many APs. I don't think I took any APs freshman year. I kind of was able to get ready that freshman year by just settling in. And then with the help of, teachers, our school built in this thing called community time where you have time to go to teachers for tutorials and all that and do homework. It's just a free block. And so I think by having that extra time and having teachers help, it's easier to manage all the course loads and sports and all that.
Yeah. Now, you have a number of siblings. How many?
I have five siblings.
Wow. So big Catholic family.
Yes.
Shout out to where you guys go to Mass at St. Rose of Lima and the pastor there, Father Jacob Ramirez. What's interesting, though, about, your brothers and sisters is that y'all go to completely different schools. It's not like everybody's going to St. Pius.
Yes.
Why did you decide to go to St. Pius X for high school?
St. Pius was just kind of a different feel. At first, I liked the co-ed feel of it. It just felt like a different environment than the super big St. Thomas and even IWA in the city. I just really liked where it was located. It was pretty close to my house. It was in a good location, which eventually led to good location in terms of my running career. But overall, I just really liked the community aspect of it. It just felt different than what other schools would offer. So,
And you had mentioned running. You did do track and cross country.
Yes.
Have you always liked running? Was that always something that you wanted to do?
So I originally first started running freshman year of high school. I was just doing cross country to stay in shape for basketball.
Okay.
And so Yeah, I was not a very good runner freshman year, but we have an amazing coach, like an amazing cross country coach, and she's the distance track coach. Mm-hmm. And that summer going into my sophomore year is when I really started to feel that I could be good at running. And so I started taking it serious, and that's where I really found my love for running.
Very good. And recently competed?
Yes. Yeah, we recently had our state track meet, and then a little earlier that week, I broke our school's record in the 1600. So,
well, congratulations.
Thank you.
A lot of hard work, a lot of training, I'm guessing.
Yes, a lot, yes.
Wow, very good. That's exciting. Well, I know that's something that you still kind of want to do as you go off, if you decide, you know, continue this seminary process and eventually end up at Holy Trinity Seminary in North Texas. I think you're thinking potentially you could still do a little bit more of mm-hmm. what track or running, right? Mm-hmm. In theory, how would that work?
Yeah, well, we can talk about this a little more in depth later, but running is one of the biggest ways I pray, because it kind of gives you an hour, or I guess for me, it's more like an hour and a half to kind of just be in silence, and God speaks through silence. Mm-hmm. And so, of course, I want to continue that for as long as I can. So hopefully I can work out maybe potentially running at University of Dallas. You know, it's obviously seminary formation comes first. So if it doesn't work out, it doesn't work out. But if I can continue to run, and that's one of the biggest ways I pray, you know, I'd love to continue doing that.
So that's so interesting. Most people don't think about prayer while running, but you're right. When you're running, it's kind of a calm time.
Yes.
There's not the hustle and bustle mm-hmm. of outside noise
exactly.
or social media or, you know, technology there. Mm-hmm. So that's a really great, concept there that I hadn't thought about. Was going to St. Pius also something that was important for you spiritually, as a person of faith?
Absolutely. So I think at first, I wasn't as involved with our like campus ministry and stuff. And that's when I met one of my best friends to this day, Mason, who was part of our campus ministry team. And he's the one mm-hmm. who actually got me involved in campus ministry, because I had altar served. I used to live in California, so that's when I altar served. I came back here. I went to St. Martha's for middle school, and I read at Mass and stuff, but I wasn't really truly involved. But then when I met him and I met our new campus ministry director, Mr. Barboza, he got me involved in altar serving at Mass, being part of preaching team. We do rosaries every Thursday morning, like with Mason. He's mm-hmm. like the lead of it. And that's what kind of, that pretty much, if I hadn't been involved in that, I don't know if I would have even considered priesthood without those two people in my life.
Yeah. So you mentioned the rosary. Mm-hmm. Any other favorite prayers or favorite saints, certain things that you like to turn to when you pray?
Yeah. My patron saint when I picked it for confirmation was St. Ignatius of Loyola. Mm-hmm. And I think St. Ignatius is a really good person to turn to in terms of, he's written really good, like his autobiography is really good, and he's written really good books. And so I think St. Ignatius is a good person to pray to, especially because I can relate his sufferings in his early life when he got hit by a cannonball in the military. And that's what made him overall come to see God. And so I think I can relate a lot of my sufferings to St. Ignatius, and even the book of Job, which is my favorite scripture.
Mm-hmm.
It's just, I can relate my sufferings to both of them. And that just helps me get closer to God.
Yeah, absolutely. Great examples there. So, like I said, that's really incredible then to think about your time just in the last 4 years at St. Pius, how much you've grown spiritually.
Yes.
And how long do you think, I mean, when, like I said, you've been involved in for altar serving and then being involved with the, you know, spiritual aspect on campus, but when did you kind of get the inkling about the priesthood? Because that's a whole different level.
So, the first time I ever thought about becoming a priest was I went to middle school at St. Martha's, and we had a person doing his pastoral year, Father David Ramirez, who's at Prince of Peace right now, and he was doing his pastoral year, and he had brought us to St. Mary's Seminary, and that's the first time I thought, oh, maybe I could become a priest, but I was like, no, that's not what I want to do.
Mm-hmm.
And over the course of high school, I had like reoccurring thoughts that maybe I could become a priest. I had a theology teacher. I've had her for 2 or 3 years now. And the first time that it really occurred to me is we had to do a project for class where you kind of play out the sacraments almost in like a skit. And I was chosen to be like the priest. And so after we had done that, she came up to me and she's like, I could really see you becoming a priest. And I like thought about it. I was like, yeah, I could see myself becoming a priest. I don't know. And then this year is where I really started to think about it. I'd really been trying to run in college, so I had been thinking about it for a while. It's just more like, no, I don't want to do that. I want to run in college. I want to go into electrical engineering. Like, I don't want to do that. And this year, when I really started getting involved in altar serving and campus ministry, I really felt a true strong call. I went to Mass and confession one day, and that's where I really felt a strong feeling. And I even had like a couple of dreams where I was basically shown what it was like to be a priest, and I think it's God showing me that. And so that's why I really started to consider it. And as I said, I went to Mass and confession, and I just felt a strong calling. And so after that, I talked to a lot of priests about what this might mean, and I just felt that I was excited for what could be if I became a priest. You know, I want to do the sacraments and all that. Mm-hmm. And so it was just like this new excitement and this new feeling I hadn't felt before. And so that's where I started to really decide, really this year, but it was a little mixture of last year's where I was like, okay, this is what I want to do.
What was the reaction from your parents, brothers and sisters, everybody in the family?
Oh, my parents were so happy. I mean, at first I first told my mom, and I remember being super scared, which is actually a normal sign when you're thinking about deciding to become a priest. You're going to be scared to tell people. Mm-hmm. So I was scared because I didn't know what my parents might think. And so I told my mom, and she was super happy, and my dad was super happy, and they're like, okay. And my dad bought me a book. I forget what it's called. It's like To Save 1,000 Souls, I think, or it's something along those lines. And it's a book about discerning the priesthood. Mm-hmm. And I read that book, and I was like, okay, I definitely want to do this. And so my dad and my mom, they were super happy. My siblings super happy. And they actually helped me start the application process. So.
Yeah. I'm sure there's a sense of joy for you just knowing that your family
yes.
supports you kind of whatever you want to do, whether
Absolutely.
It's running or going to the seminary, all this stuff. So very, very good. Well, that's wonderful that they were so supportive of you as you discerned this process. And I want to make sure I, again, use this term discerning, because in a sense, you're still doing that.
Mm-hmm.
You're still
yes.
going through the discernment process.
Absolutely.
Tell me about kind of getting in touch with the Archdiocese and Father Richard McNeely, who's a friend of our program
yes.
as well. How did you get in touch with him and have those conversations?
It was actually super easy. So going back to our new campus minister, Mr. Barboza, he's like good friends with Father Richard. So all he did, I went into Mr. Barboza's office like before school one day, mm-hmm. and I was like, okay, I need to talk to you. I know I want to become a priest, but I don't even know where to start. Sure enough, he calls him up. He's like, Father, or I don't know if he called him. I think he texted him. And mm-hmm. he's like, and they got a meeting set up at St. Pius with Father Richard. And so it was super.
So he came there to St.
Yes,
Pius to talk with
yes.
you. That's great that he was able to do that.
Yes.
Excellent. And so he was kind of telling you about, it just seems to be like it's a pretty extensive process
yeah,
and all the stuff that you got to go
is.
Through. So I guess the idea then was just for you just kind of take it one step at a time.
Mm-hmm.
And I guess kind of talking to him about your story
yes.
and all that stuff. So
mm-hmm.
very good. So from here, Graham, tell me, like I said, now you graduated from St. Pius. Tell me about the next steps for kind of entering the seminary formation. You don't go right away to Holy Trinity Seminary. What do you do next?
So there's this new year that a couple years ago the Pope instituted called the propaedeutic year. And so I think this has always been around for the summer. I'm not 100% sure.
Mm-hmm.
But from my understanding, and this could change, like they could change what parish I go to, but I get sent to a parish for maybe 7 weeks during the summer. And
mm-hmm.
so I believe I'm going to Sacred Heart in Conroe. That, you know, it can change at any moment.
Yeah.
But yeah, and I still have lots of lab tests and applications I still got to do for like Holy Trinity and other mm-hmm. things of that nature. But as far as I know right now, I'm going to Sacred Heart in Conroe. It's like a 7-week boot camp kind of thing.
Yeah.
And so, but yeah. And then I go to Holy Trinity in August, I believe. So
very good. And so the idea by also going to Holy Trinity, you're also going to be able to get your, well, like a 4-year degree,
mm-hmm.
right?
Yes.
So you kind of do stuff with the University of Dallas.
Yes. Yes.
Catholic University
yes.
there as well. So
mm-hmm.
very good. So then I guess you also pick a major then.
Kind of. I think I'm not 100% sure, because when you're doing the propaedeutic year, you're, mm-hmm. I believe you take University of Dallas classes, but you're not degree seeking for just that first year.
Okay, yeah.
But I think after that, it's mm-hmm. philosophy. I could be wrong, but I'm pretty sure it's philosophy.
That would make sense.
Yeah.
Right, it would make sense to be philosophy.
Yes.
Very, very good. Well, That's great. Well, Holy Trinity Seminary is a great seminary, and of course, the University of Dallas is well respected. So that's fantastic. And so, and also being when you're at Sacred Heart in Conroe, if it turns out to be that, that's a very nice parish.
Yes.
So I'm sure you're going to enjoy spending time there. At the parish. So very good. So, like I said, you're still kind of considering. We'll see if it works out. Where you're still able to run if you're up there at Holy Trinity Seminary. Take me a step back, though. Again, I'd mentioned you're still discerning.
Mm-hmm.
How does that process work in terms of just your own prayer life? Do you pray on a regular basis about that specifically? Do you offer a certain prayer about that? How does that work?
Absolutely. It's definitely tough discerning because you're trying to truly set apart what God is calling you to do. Mm-hmm. And so there's a lot of different aspects when you're discerning. You know, you have to be celibate. You have to really listen to God's calling. And so I think specifically recently, I've really been praying about what God is calling me to do. And at first it was discerning, okay, do I even want to enter seminary? That's a whole different discernment in itself than do I want to become a priest? And then that's what seminary kind of builds on, is you determining whether you want to become a priest or not. And so I definitely think I pray a lot about discernment. That's not the only thing I pray about, of course. I always I pray for other people. I pray for peace in our world. But I definitely think that discernment plays a really big role in my prayer life, especially just going to Mass, like praying before Mass. Like, I always pray. I'm like, thank you for allowing me to see this vocation, this call that I think you're calling me to. And I overall just thank God for everything he's put in my life. So,
yeah. You had mentioned, you know, some of the people who had an impact on you, like Mr. Barbosa. We mentioned Father Richard. I want to go back and just give one more shout out to Father Jacob Ramirez, pastor at St. Rose of Lima. What was it like having a conversation with him about that?
It was very interesting because he has a very kind of unique vocation story where he went to college first.
Okay.
And I really just thank Father Jacob because he has been very influential. I remember I had reached out to him because I knew you needed to talk to your pastor before, like, you need to get like a letter of recommendation from your pastor, but I didn't know my pastor super well. He was kind of a new pastor at our parish. So I remember reaching out to him, and then I talked to him for a while about my vocation and what it might mean, and he just offered up some really good advice about like how God calls you to the priesthood and like how he puts that thought there. It's not just like automatically there to go to the priesthood. And Father Jacob has been super helpful throughout the entire application process. Even I'm working out getting my cassock for that's required seminary wear, and also just like letters of recommendation and just advice throughout the whole thing. So
yeah, very good. That's great to have that kind of backing from a pastor and good advice as well. Well, since we're talking about advice, Graham, I did want to ask you if you have any advice to other high schoolers, now that you graduated from St. Pius, for those who are also discerning. Maybe there's people like you who take honors classes or AP courses, and they're not quite sure as well. Maybe some are also considering engineering, or maybe have, you know, they like computers and technology as well, just like you. But they're trying to figure out what they want to do with their life. Maybe they do feel spiritually connected to God, but aren't sure. What would be your advice to people there who are a little bit younger than you, still trying to figure out what they want to do?
I think having time each day to just listen to what God is calling you to do, as I relate my running towards that. Just having your own time to just sit there and listen to what God is saying. You can even talk to him. Like, I sometimes pray the rosary when I'm running. And so that hour and a half that I have each day, so no matter what, I'll have that hour and a half to speak to God, no matter how busy my schedule is. I know that every day that I have to run, I might as well also talk to God during that time. So for people who are maybe interested in computers, maybe when you're programming, maybe stop and just like think for a second what God might be calling you to do. Just set apart some time for prayer or just silent time, even in any sport, even when you're like shooting around a basketball, like early mornings. I have some friends who go early in the morning. Just when you're shooting around a basketball, just like instead of just plugging in, listening to music, instead of just don't listen to music and just listen to silence, because that's where God will speak through.
That's true. And that's tough to do. A lot of us, yes, it's hard to just sit in silence or run in silence. Feels like in this day and age, we need some kind of stimulus.
Yes.
So I think that's great advice to be able to have kind of the silent moment. And that's been good for you to have that. So I think that's wonderful advice to take time to have that silence, to embrace that without just music or something in your ears. So that's great. Very good. So then I do want to mention this. We'll be praying for anybody who is out there that might be discerning the priesthood, whether they're at the high school level, you know, college level, like Father Jacob when he was there in college. So we'll be praying for all of that. In the meantime, though, I would be remiss, Graham, if I didn't at least give a shout out to some of those priests like Father Jacob who participate in the annual Priests versus Seminarians basketball game
yes.
that we cover here on the Guadalupe Radio Network. Since you played basketball at St. Pius for 2 years, eventually, if you become a seminarian, do you want to play in that game?
Oh, absolutely. I would love to play in that game. I went to the past two games. I went this year, last year, and I was just envisioning myself maybe possibly if I get through seminary, even if when I get to St. Mary's, playing in that game. So
yeah, very good. And I know we've got, yeah, like I said, we've got seminarians from all across, whether they're going to Holy Trinity or St. Mary's or even in Austin as well, that all participate. So, well, that would be a lot of fun if that ends up happening. We'll be happy to cover it and maybe interview you at that time, Graham. But we'll, like I said, we'll see how that goes. Like I said, I know all of this for seminary formation is a process. You'll continue to pray, you know, in the meantime, spending some time at the parish this summer at Sacred Heart. So we'll be praying for you. And again, we'll encourage anybody out there to continue to pray for those discerning the priesthood. Before we wrap things up, Graham, anything else that you want to mention? I know you'd already thanked several people, Mr. Barbosa, Father Jacob, Father Richard. Anybody else, you know, kind of just grateful for everything that you've helped you go through?
Of course. I mentioned earlier my friend Mason. I know he's probably going to be listening to this at some point. I shout out Mason because he's been such a influence on my life, especially spiritually, and I don't know where I'd be without him today. So if he's listening to this, yeah, shout out to him.
Very good. Well, certainly we're blessed to have a lot of great places where you can get a great Catholic education, like St. Pius X High School. So again, congratulations, Graham, on your graduation.
Thank you.
You've definitely kept busy with everything, AP tests, track and cross country, and all of that. So we appreciate your taking the time to be here and talking with us. Again, Graham Lively, just graduated from St. Pius X High School. Thanks again for being here, Graham.
Thank you for having me.
This is Sarah Cortez at Catholic Literary Arts, and registration is open for Summer Writing Camp. Grades 4 through 8th in Fearless Catholic Writing Camp. Grades 9 through 12 in the High School Writers Institute. Join us June 8th through 12th in Houston, Texas at the University of St. Thomas to write poetry, essay, fiction, and sacred stories. Registration is open at CatholicLiteraryArts.org, CatholicLiteraryArts.org.
Mr. Potty Plumbing is a proud sponsor of this radio station, AM 1430. Paul and Dorinda Obsta are the owners of Mr. Potty Plumbing and attend Mass at St. Bartholomew in Katy. Mr. Potty provides plumbing services for the Katy, Sugar Land, Cypress, and surrounding areas. Their slogan is, "When your plumbing is naughty, call Mr. Potty." Their website is callmrpotty.com. That's callmrpotty.com.
Deacon Glenn Trahan here, owner of the TRW family of companies and proud sponsor of the Guadalupe Radio Network. For 60 years, TRW has helped our clients to optimize the use of their facilities with operable wall products, creating effective, flexible, and acoustically controlled workspaces, making them more productive and successful. And TRW is committed to supporting ministries that also make our community and our world a better place, just like this Guadalupe Radio Network station. You can contact me at trwfamily.com. God bless.
Greetings, TRN listeners. This is Attorney Ruben Rendon of Rendon & Associates. We value the opportunity to work with our clients who have experienced personal injuries and or job injuries. We provide services in English and Spanish and have over 75 years combined experience practicing law.
Nosotros hablamos español para todos los clientes que hablan en español. Estamos aquí para asistirlos.
You can find out more at RubenRendon.com.
Thank you.
Welcome back to Catholic Lunch Break, the weekly program where we catch up with all things Catholic in the greater Houston area. This is Wyatt Goolsbee, executive director of this radio station. We at the Guadalupe Radio Network love to promote upcoming activities at Catholic churches across the greater Houston area. That includes a sacred music concert at the Church of the Annunciation in downtown Houston this Thursday, May 21st. So we arranged for Father Paul Felix to join us right here on Catholic Lunch Break. Joining us on the Guadalupe Radio Network to talk more about an evening of sacred music coming up Thursday, May 21st, is Father Paul Felix. Father Felix is the pastor at the Church of the Annunciation, which is located in downtown Houston, a historic church, Church of the Annunciation. Father Felix, great to have you back here on the program. Always appreciate your being with us.
Thank you so much, Wyatt. It's such a pleasure to be with you and with your listeners.
I want to bring people up to speed at all the goings-on at the Church of the Annunciation. I remember talking to you last about a big project that has come to fruition, which is a very important part of the church, the parking lot. But before I get to all of that and everything that's going on, for people who are unfamiliar, Father Felix, tell me, what is the Church of the Annunciation? And I understand it's a very important church historically.
Yes, the Church of the Annunciation is the mother church of all the Catholic churches in Houston, all the Catholic parishes. It was founded in 1869, and the church was built and dedicated in 1871. This is shortly after the Civil War. And there was a church built before that. It was a very small church. It wasn't built very well. It burned down, and they never rebuilt it. And so Annunciation became the mother parish out of which all the other parishes in Houston were carved. So it's been here in what is now the heart of downtown since that time. And it was a neighborhood initially, but now here we are in the heart of downtown Houston with so many things happening all around us.
And I know that's true because you guys are right next to the ballpark, so there's always a lot of activity. I'm guessing in that sense, Father Felix, it's a bit of a blessing in the sense that people can be kind of exposed to the church and realize the church is right there and not even think necessarily, you know, when they're going to a ballpark that they might come across a very historic and important Catholic church.
Yes, and we seize upon the opportunity to evangelize as best we can with all the, really the world passing by on this intersection of Texas and Crawford Street. The Daikin Stadium is right here. We were here first.
Yes.
They constructed the ballpark, and with a convention center and so many other things around us, we really literally have people coming from all over the world on an ongoing basis. So we try to welcome people here. We have docents who give, I call them pilgrimages more so than tours, because we want it to be a spiritual experience for people. There's a lot of activity around here. Of course, now baseball season is in, and we're ramping up our prayers for the Astros, and hoping that they will have a good season, that there won't be significant injuries, and that the sport of baseball is something that's life giving for not only the players but also for the fans who go to the games.
I know that's important to pray for the health of the players, safety of the fans. I think that's absolutely wonderful, Father Felix. And I think that it's great that you guys have an opportunity to be a beacon of evangelization right there in the heart of downtown Houston. I will take note of the fact that you guys really love to promote the Eucharist there at the Church of the Annunciation, a regular Eucharistic processions, Eucharistic adoration. So I just want to take note of the fact that I know it's really important to you and to so many parishioners there at the church.
Yes, and we have actually Eucharistic, and so for Corpus Christi, we will have a Eucharistic procession following our 11 o'clock Mass. But also we have, before then, we have a Marian procession in honor of Our Lady of Fatima coming up. And there's always something happening. Now, you know, relative to the baseball stadium, I had a banner made that we put up on the fence. And it says, make it a spiritual doubleheader, catch Mass and the game. So we're trying to evangelize the culture, you know.
Great idea. Love that idea. I want to take note of something big that had happened at the Church of the Annunciation. And that may seem, may not seem all that important at first, but when you really get down to it, it's vital to the parish. And that is, of course, the addition of and the construction of this parking garage that you guys share with the Incarnate Word Academy. Tell me why that has been important, and I'm guessing it's been a blessing for you guys to have more parking spot right there in the heart of downtown Houston, so where people can come to the church.
Absolutely. This has helped so much, the situation. Annunciation was founded in a neighborhood that at the time was known as Quality Hill, and it was not downtown. But then over time, over the years, the downtown sort of overgrew the area and so forth. Houstonians, Texans, we really love our cars. We value our independence and our ability to move around and so forth. And so we are a city that operates on and through our vehicles. And we've had very limited parking over time. The available parking in the area has diminished so much that it was actually significantly impacting both our parish and Incarnate Word Academy. And so over the years, we've worked to negotiate and finally be able to construct a multi-level parking garage. And that has been such a game changer for us. It has made available parking where people don't have to take the risk of getting parking tickets and also, you know, trying to come to events and not being able to find a place because of so much traffic and lack of parking here in downtown. So this is very important for us. It's, of course, very expensive endeavor, and so we have to pay for it. But it has made it possible so much easier for our people to come and attend Mass and come for various activities and events that we have going on. And I believe in having a very dynamic parish life that offers a lot of opportunities for people to come and experience different things that are edifying and help strengthen faith, you know, and build up the renewal of a strong and beautiful Catholic culture.
And I will take
of a secular world.
Sure, and I will take note of the fact that our shepherd, Archbishop Joe Vasquez, has blessed the parking garage as well. So I'm sure it's also a blessing for you, Father Felix, just to know that you got the backing of the Archdiocese too.
Yes, we're so grateful for all the help that has come to us from the Archdiocese to make sure that we do this well, you know.
Very good. Well, as you mentioned, Father Felix, a lot of goings on at the Church of the Annunciation. One of those is an evening of sacred music, which is coming up this Thursday, May 21st. It's open to everybody. It's an evening sacred music event inside the church. Again, Thursday, May 21st. It's at 7 o'clock. I mentioned it's free, but if people want to make a donation of their choice, they can do that as well. There'll also be a little reception afterwards, thanks to the Marian Daughters there. So tell me, Father Felix, a little about this evening of sacred music. What's going on?
Yes, well, our church is over 150 years old. Our pipe organ is 102 years old. It was the contract was made in 1923, and the organ was finished being built in 1924. And we were really targeting having the organ restored, repaired, because for all the time I've been here, it's not been at full functioning. It's performed tremendously over more than a century, but parts wear out and so forth. And so it took us a while to raise the money, but we finally did, and we got the organ repaired. And so now that it's been repaired, we really want to put it to use, and we want to sort of show off the beauty and the power and the versatility of such a great instrument. And this instrument is the Pilcher's Sons symphonic organ. And so it's able to replicate the sound of instruments in a symphony. And it's a very, very unique and rare instrument. And so for music lovers, this provides such a great opportunity. I have a good friend, Ference Eleni, who plays in the first violin section of the Houston Symphony. He's from Hungary and a devout Catholic, a good friend. And we are collaborating together to put on this concert. And the first section of the concert is sacred music, and it's going to culminate in a piece attributed to Albinoni. It's his Adagio in G minor. And if you ever heard it before, it's a very beautiful, passionate piece of music. And I think it's such a beautiful instrument to go with the organ and the violin. And Ferenc will also be playing viola with this piece. And then also the second half of the concert will be The Four Seasons by Vivaldi. Mm-hmm. And to hear it performed live in a place with the acoustics of our church is going to be a really wonderful thing. But it all redounds to the glory of God and the beauty of God's creation. And so it will be in our church. I recommend that people bring a mirror with them, because the performers are going to be up in the choir loft, which will be behind us since we'll be seated in the pews. If they want to see the musicians carrying out their art. But certainly those who like to close their eyes and just soak it all in through their auditory sense, of course, that's beautiful as well. Mm-hmm. But it promises to be a very, very beautiful and then beautiful event, and then we will have a nice reception afterward. And so admission is free, but we do ask people to obtain, go online to our website and register so that we can plan appropriately for the reception and so forth, and mm-hmm. make sure that the seating available is available for people. So, but we think this is a wonderful opportunity to make a contribution to the formation of our people with respect to sacred music and fostering the spiritual life in ways that are really edifying. And so we're very, very excited about this opportunity and to re-inaugurate, if you will, the use of this beautiful historic pipe organ, which is such a precious instrument dedicated to the glory of God and the worship of God.
Yes, and you know, Father Felix, I was just thinking about that thing about this restored pipe organ when you said it's, you know, more than 100 years old. I'm just thinking how incredible that is, going back to what you were talking about with the history of the Church of the Annunciation. So that's absolutely incredible, and I know a lot of people would be interested in hearing what the restored pipe organ sounds like if they, you know, if they haven't heard it in a long time or haven't been back at the church in a long time. As you'd mentioned, this evening of sacred music, this concert has not just the pipe organ, but mentions, you know, you'd mentioned the use of the violin, harpsichord, cello. I mean, this is going to be a full-on concert, so that's very exciting. Yes. That you guys are able to do this in the church with support of so many people. I did want to ask you, Father Felix, about this, because there is something, it's hard to explain, something profound about sacred music in terms of its ability to bring people closer to God. And like I said, it's hard to describe, because I think in many cases, sacred music, there's not necessarily a parallel. Some people might go and hear sacred music, and it's hard to compare it to something else they've heard in their lives. If they do, as you say, if they listen and they close their eyes, they feel like they can become closer to God. What do you think it is about sacred music that may be unique?
Well, truly sacred music, in my opinion, should not really reflect the modes of secular music. I think that the sacred music, by its very nature, should be ordered toward the worship of God, and it should have a transcendent quality to it that is uplifted, you know. And in the secular world, there's so much stuff out there that's being produced in a very commercial kind of way, consumerist kind of way, and it appeals to very base impulses. Many times it's very angry or very provocative in ways that are not life-giving and edifying to the human person. And certainly, you know, of course, we've heard of people consecrating their music to Satan and so forth, and we see damaging effects in the culture because of that. And so this concert is a part of an effort to help bring people to recognize and have exposure to things that are truly edifying, that truly have a spiritual quality to them, that that does help us to enter into contemplation of the sacred mysteries of our salvation and the transcendence of God, and the fact that we are human beings with a body and a soul, and that our soul needs to be nourished and edified.
Absolutely. A lot of great points there, Father Paul Felix. Sorry to cut you off there. I just want to remind everyone again, if you want to hear that sacred music concert at the Church of the Annunciation downtown Houston, it's going to be this Thursday, May 21st at 7 o'clock there in the church. Again, an evening of sacred music, and a lot of people are going to be especially enjoy listening to that organ as well. So again, we love being able to promote sacred music concerts like this one. Again, Church of the Annunciation, free, but they will accept donations. Downtown Houston this Thursday, May 21st at 7 o'clock. My thanks to Father Paul Felix, pastor at the Church of the Annunciation. We're always glad to have him on the program. And if you are just joining us, you are listening to Catholic Lunch Break, the weekly program where we talk about all things Catholic in the greater Houston area. This is Wyatt Goolsbee here with you, executive director of this radio station, KSHJ, and the San Jose Clinic, a ministry with a presence in Houston and in Fort Bend County, is serving those without health insurance, has a new person in their leadership role. Paul Kulas joined San Jose Clinic as ministry's president and CEO in March. He brings a wealth of healthcare knowledge and experience. And just as important, however, is his desire to join a ministry with a mission to help others in need in our community. Joining us on the Guadalupe Radio Network is Paul Kulas. He is the new president and chief executive officer of San Jose Clinic, a ministry of the Archdiocese of Galveston, Houston, that has provided health care to uninsured and underserved individuals in the greater Houston community. Paul, this is your first time here at the KSHJ studio. Welcome in. Glad to have you here, sir.
Thank you so much for having me. Greatly appreciate it.
I can imagine for you, the past 2 months, Paul, have just been really busy trying to get learning everything you can as the president of San Jose Clinic, because you came on board, in March? Tell me just what it's been like. I'd imagine just kind of trying to figure everything out, running around everywhere.
I'm so grateful for the opportunity. I'm truly blessed to be in this position, serving as a CEO at San Jose Clinic. Mm-hmm. The amount of providers that come through our clinics that volunteer their time, the leadership, the staff, all of our foundations, donors, all of our contributors through the Catholic community is just so fantastic to see, and just so very grateful to be a part of it.
Very good. So, Paul, give me a little bit of background here for people who are not familiar with what the San Jose Clinic is. Maybe they've heard of it before. They know you've got an office in Houston, Fort Bend, but give me an overview. What is the San Jose Clinic?
The San Jose Clinic is one of the oldest charity clinics in Houston. We've been around for 104 years. We provide comprehensive health care services to the uninsured and underserved population of Greater Houston and Fort Bend County. Mm-hmm. So we have a clinic in Midtown and also a clinic in Rosenberg. And we provide primary care services, specialty care services, dental, vision, physical therapy, pharmacy, social services, and lab, all within both locations. And just really, you know, our mission is really to take care of the uninsured and underserved, no matter what their ability to pay is. We just want to do it with compassion and dignity.
I had mentioned it's a ministry. It's connected to the Archdiocese of Galveston, Houston. What's the connection there?
We both organizations, the Archdiocese and San Jose Clinic, have missions that are truly deep-rooted to take care of the underserved population of Houston. Mm-hmm. So we're just very grateful for the partnership. We're grateful for the opportunity to really work very closely with the Archdiocese on our missions and really blend them together to take care of the underserved population within Greater Houston and Fort Bend County.
And like you said, San Jose Clinic's now been around for over 100 years, serving those underserved, uninsured people as well. Tell me, Paul, a little about how you got involved as you know, applied for the presidential position. When did you first hear about that position? What made you think about, you know, maybe I should apply to be part of the San Jose Clinic?
Great question. So I've been in healthcare for 30 years. I grew up in Michigan. I spent 17 years with a Catholic health system there called Trinity Health. Mm-hmm. Really cut my teeth in practice management, clinic operations, leadership, executive positions, all around overseeing physician practices. So I spent a number of years there. Then I got recruited to a Catholic health system in Northern California as well, doing the same type of work. And when we became empty nesters in California, I have three kids, and my wife is from the Sugar Land area. So we had the opportunity to come back to Texas and happy to be here. And as I was looking for the next opportunity, I really was very impressed, and what resonated with me was the mission of San Jose Clinic. I've been in healthcare for 30 years, so I knew that my operations experience could really blend well with a mission that has so much impact, and it's just so meaningful for me to have that opportunity, and I could make a difference. So I'm truly driven by service, faith, and the ability to truly improve access for those uninsured patients who are trying to get health care.
Yeah. You had mentioned your family, so I would be remiss if I didn't give a shout out to your wife, your three kids, extended family you got across the greater Houston area. And you and your family go to St. Matthias the Apostle, which is in Magnolia, Texas. So shout out to everybody there at St. Matthias the Apostle, including Deacon Glenn Trahan, a friend of this program as well. So
absolutely, a great parish.
Yeah, absolutely. And I know that your faith is important to you. Tell me about, expand on that a little bit, because you had mentioned the values of the San Jose mm-hmm. Clinic. Tell me more about how that aligns with your own values, what you want to do now moving forward with your career.
Absolutely. So again, it goes back to the mission. Truly, ways to create access for those uninsured and underserved patients is so key in healthcare today, mm-hmm. Giving them opportunities to really find ways to see a primary care physician, have preventative care, patient education. We take care of a lot of those things at San Jose Clinic, so families and individuals who are going through a tough situation, they have an opportunity to get in front of those medical conditions before they get too serious. Mm-hmm. And a lot of times that can avoid any unnecessary emergency room visits or hospitalization for these individuals and families. So just really trying to create those access points here in Greater Houston and also Fort Bend County so the uninsured have that opportunity.
Yeah, and they definitely need it, certainly here in the greater Houston area. There are a lot of people who are in need of help, and they're grateful for the San Jose Clinic, as you mentioned, the staff, everybody that works there for what they can provide. In many cases, they wouldn't have any other place to turn to. How do you guys make the determination to actually help a person? I imagine they have to fill out a lot of forms, information about their income and stuff like that.
Yes, there's an eligibility process that each patient goes through, mm-hmm. and it's a pretty basic process. We have a wonderful staff that really walks them through the eligibility requirements. Truly, we don't take any patients that have health insurance. We see the ones who okay. don't have any health insurance at all.
Okay.
They go through our eligibility process, and right after that, we're able to basically book them an appointment for the services they need, whether mm-hmm. it's medical, dental, physical therapy, whatever they may need moving forward.
Yeah. So because you have such a long background in healthcare, been in that field for a long time, I've got to ask you, Paul, about the rising cost of healthcare. Big concern here in America, just going to hospital visit, emergency room, everything seems like it's going up. How do you guys at San Jose Clinic begin to manage those costs? And be able to still be offer so much to people who are in need.
Healthcare costs are a huge concern for everybody.
Yeah.
Patients, employers, everybody. It's just a really complicated, complex industry to work within. At San Jose Clinic, we filled the critical gap where if patients are uninsured, they have a place to go. And again, it's really getting these patients and families the care they need before things get too serious. Mm-hmm. So we are the safety net, truly, here in Greater Houston. And we partner with many of the hospital systems here to really take on these patients who have nowhere else to go and provide them with compassionate care, comprehensive care, and we do it with dignity.
Yeah. Tell me about why this is such a vital ministry, San Jose Clinic, for Harris County, Greater Houston area, Fort Bend County. Why do we need this? Why does San Jose Clinic need to be around at least another 104 years?
Well, Texas has the highest uninsured rate in the nation. And I don't know if everybody realizes that. So truly, what we do as a ministry serving Greater Houston and Fort Bend County, it's truly vital for healthcare here in general locally. Mm-hmm. But also, it's just not about healthcare. It's really providing hope, dignity, and stability to those families and individuals when they're going through a tough time. And we provide that at San Jose Clinic to give them that outlet to have medical services and healthcare services that they need to make it through their next journey, their next step through difficult times and situations they may occur.
Yeah. There's a lot. Like I said, there's a lot involved, I'm sure, for you as the president, trying to kind of wrap your head around everything that needs to go on. That being said, I saw some of the information, Paul, that came out on the Texas Catholic Herald about you taking over as president and CEO. There was a really nice quote by Archbishop Joe Vasquez, our shepherd for the Archdiocese. He said, quote, "We are confident that Paul's experience in leadership will strengthen San Jose Clinic as we continue serving some of the most vulnerable members of our community. His commitment to service and his understanding of mission-driven healthcare make him a great leader for our organization." Paul, when you hear a quote like that, tell me honestly, how does that make you feel?
Fantastic. I'm just so appreciative of the opportunity, very humbled by those comments by the Archbishop. He's a fantastic leader, a fantastic individual, and it's just an honor to be in this position and in this capacity to serve, to really move this mission forward for Greater Houston, and really to partner with the Archbishop and the entire Catholic community here in Houston and Fort Bend County to, you know, provide that access to the uninsured and underserved.
Very good. I want to follow up on that. You touched a little bit about your own faith and the vision and mission of the San Jose Clinic, which connects to our Catholic faith. You know, when I think of Christ as an example of him caring for the poor, the people who are in need, that kind of reminds me of some of the work that, you know, staff and people who are working with the patients at San Jose Clinic do as well. Tell me about how the work that you do, the work staff does, follows in, you know, the path of Christ, if you will.
We're a ministry, and truly healthcare is a ministry in general. Mm-hmm. And
many people may not think about that.
Right.
I think healthcare is a ministry.
It's a ministry. It truly is. And we're doing God's work, and we're doing it for the most vulnerable patient population that truly needs it. We're that safety net here in the area that really is the outlet for patients to get those comprehensive healthcare services they need.
Yeah, very good. I had mentioned that you and your wife, y'all go to Mass at St. Matthias the Apostle in Magnolia. I do like to ask people when they're on the program, Paul, if they have any favorite prayers or favorite saints, personal devotions, that kind of thing. For you, do you have any favorite prayers or any go-to prayers, things that you like to turn to?
I'm a daily individual who says the rosary every single morning.
Oh, wow.
I start my day with the rosary.
Can't go wrong with the rosary. My thanks to Paul Kulas, President and CEO of San Jose Clinic. Also, my thanks to everyone who helped produce this program, Catholic Lunch Break, including my colleagues Zach Allen, David Magianis, Jax Morris, and Tim Mott. Again, thanks to all of you for listening and your support of the Guadalupe Radio Network. And until next time, stay Catholic, Houston.